Blog Talk Radio.
And finally, it's 100 years since the start of World War I. A century later, the son of Robert Graves, one of Britain's best-known war poets, remembers the profound effect the conflict had on his father.
He never really recovered. I don't think anyone recovered from that war.
Grey, haunted eyes, absent-mindedly glaring from wide, uneven orbits.
He sort of sat me on his knee as a 4 or 5 years old. And one of the things he used to do is said, "Feel here." And he had a lump above his brow, which was actually a piece of granite.
One brow drooping somewhat over the eye, because of a missile fragment still in hearing, skin deep, as a foolish record of old world fighting.
In July 1916, which is the date of the Battle of the Somme, he takes a walk into the wood, actually looking for overcoats and things like that for winter, for his men. And he comes across this dead German, pretty gory sight. A poem came along shortly afterwards in which he describes this. "To you who'd read my songs of war and only hear of blood and fame, I'll say, you've heard it said before, war's hell. And if you doubt the same, today I found in Mamet's wood a certain cure for lust of blood, where, propped against a shattered trunk in a great mess of things unclean, sat a dead Boche. He scowled and stunk with clothes and face of sodden green, big-bellied, spectacled, cropped-haired, dripping black blood from nose and beard." You know, he suffered from shell shock. He had 30 nightmares until at least 10 years after. One of the things he found very hard to accept was this idea of joyfulness at the end of the war.
"When the days of rejoicing are over, when the flags are stowed safely away, they will dream of another wild war to end wars, and another wild armistice day. But the boys who are killed in the trenches, who fought with no rage and no rant, we left them stretched out on their pallets of mud, low down with the worm and the ant."
Here in Mallorca, he could very much live his own life. In those terms, I think it was good for him. And he could really concentrate here on what he really loved doing, which was writing. When we used to go down to the beach, I remember. And of course, he also carried with him his army knapsack and his water bottle. But certainly, he didn't have to talk with anyone else. He had very few people he could relate to here. He was always working. Towards the end of his life, the war started coming back to him.
"I don't dream, but I got a very strong mental picture of it. I can see the whole thing as vividly as I can this room."
When he was in a wheelchair, and we'd wheel him, and there was a big bang or something, and he'd sort of always jump if something was going on. He'd almost point a gun at you. It was a very strange end of a life. But at the very end, he was sitting in a chair and just sighed, and that was it. He died very peacefully here.
William Graves at his father's house in Mallorca. Well, that's all from Witness for this month, and indeed the year. Next year, we'll be bringing you more
Welcome to In Our Craft, We're Selling Art. I'm your host, Richard Weissman, and this is Late Night Poets. And normally I have my co-host Neutron Bomb with me, but she had some phone problems. So I do have, I believe, Pam, and she should be here
yes,
right now.
Yes, you do. Hello, Richard.
Thanks. Hi, Pam. Thanks so much for stepping in and co-hosting the show.
Well, you know what? I'm happy to be here. I mean, as soon as I saw your topic anyways, within seconds, I knew I was going to write for it and be here. So, you know, as much as I'd like to have Neutron here too, because, you know, it's just fun to have the three of us. It's, you know, definitely a great, going to be a great show.
Yeah. He was not only a incredibly talented, they called them, that whole genre, they called them war poets, all these really talented poets that wrote during the First World War and just, you know, horrific poetry, but it just, it stays with you and it's so fresh, even, you know, more than 100 years later, it's just as relevant as when they wrote it back in 1914, 1915. And he was among a bunch of them. There were, you know, and some of them unfortunately died during the war in battle. But you think about like Flanders Field is one of those famous war poems. And he wrote quite a bit. And if he had done nothing else, he still would have been an incredibly important poet. But then later in life, he wrote I, Claudius, which I forget what its ranking is, but it's like considered to be one of the great novels of all time. And one of our poets wrote to I, Claudius. And we have a SoundCloud from her. I think it's Stalina.
Oh, yes. I read that.
Yeah.
Yep. Very cool.
Yeah. So it's going to be a real exciting night, and I'm so glad you could join us. And I guess, so what did you think of the intro that I pulled?
Well, I have to say, I did watch it, like when you posted it to, I watched it because I find myself, when I know I'm going to be co-hosting your show or even be calling in, I like to be prepared ahead of time. And I'm so glad I did, because the thing is I already liked his poetry just from reading it. But by getting to hear him, Robert Graves' son, talk about him and what it was like growing up with him and what his experience was like with PTSD, you know, it just was so moving. And I got to say, I highly recommend, because it's wonderful to listen to, but if anybody can go to YouTube and find that video and watch it, you really have to, because there's this part, and you know what I'm talking about, Richard, where Robert Graves is reading his own poem, and it's a poem about war, like I think about Anastasia Day or however it's pronounced.
Yeah.
And at the end of the reading, he takes off his glasses, and there's this look in his eyes, and it's a look of a man who is so haunted by what he remembers that it just moves you so much. So, yeah, definitely a wonderful choice that really, for an intro, that really showed the struggles that he went through.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. I think especially for him, a couple things. There was, I think there's survivor's guilt. And especially the way that the British Army used to do it in those days, and maybe they still do, I don't know. But back in those days, if you were from, for lack of a better term, the aristocracy or the gentleman's class, you were made an officer. And so he had men that he was responsible for, and, you know, he went into battle with them, and some of them never came out. And so I think that makes it even worse in terms of survivor's guilt, because he was just a kid himself, you know. I thought, even though it was a little bit long, it kind of creates a context for all the work we're going to go into tonight, so. All right. So with that, I guess we're, and it is just the two of us in the room so far. With that, I guess we'll get the show rolling, there's a lot of poetry.
All right. Well, first up we have There's No Money in Poetry by Stephen Hollins. And go ahead, Richard, please, and give that a read for us.
Okay. So this is Stephen Hollins. There's No Money in Poetry. In the shadows of words, under the weight of ink and dreams, poets toil in quiet resolve, painting visions of life unseen. From the blood-soaked trenches of the Great War, where Graves bared his pen to the dance of death, to ancient myths that breathed life, whispering secrets of gods and men, poets journeyed, their heartbeats ablaze. Pens celebrate the history of the human heart. There's no money in poetry, no gold within the verses that flow. Yet the wealth of the poet outshines shallow gleams of coin in tow. Currency of thought and spirit, etched on tattered pages torn, treasures not of this earthly realm, opulence deep within is born. This modern world where chaos reigns, truth blurs among cacophonic noise. Poets persist, unyielding brave, bearing the torch of wisdom's grace. From the ashes, they rise anew to chronicle our world here, now, today. But there's no poetry, there's no money in poetry, and there's no poetry in money. In the end, when all is weighed, poets' drumbeats, poets' heartbeats drum, true value paid. End of poem. And Pam, what'd you think of that?
Oh my goodness, this was absolutely inspiring. I feel like he took the prompt and just ran with it. Powerful imagery throughout, amazing heartfelt write. I like how it speaks on the wealth, the true wealth, the wealth that isn't things that are gold or money, that belongs in a poet's heart. You know, and I like how he speaks on the idea that poets express a vision of the modern world. This modern world where chaos reigns, truth blurs among cacophonic noise, poets persist unyielding, brave, bearing the torch of wisdom, grace. From the ashes they rise anew to chronicle our world here, now, today. Those are just wonderful lines speaking on how poets almost have an obligation to their gift to speak up about what's going on in the world, in the here and the now. And so excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, great comment, Pam. I, too, really love this piece. And that's one of the reasons why I just decided to open the show with it. There's no money in poetry, no gold within the verses that flow, yet the wealth of the poet outshines shallow gleams of coins in tow. What beautiful lines, well executed musing on our non-commercial passion. I like how he brought in the historical context of Graves' poetry vis-a-vis the Great War, with from the blood-soaked trenches of the Great War, where Graves bared his pen to the dance of death. It was just really touching. And the beautiful thing about what we do on Late Night Poets is we bring it all to life on the radio. And oftentimes, like happened to me with this one, that second read when I'm reading it aloud and trying to really make it sing for the radio show, it hits me more on a deeper emotional level. And this one really did that. You know, I kind of felt the sadness of of what it is that we do writing poetry, knowing that there's there's no monetary payoff. And it's kind of bittersweet, you know. It's we do it, we know there's no money in it, that it's going to take time, and the payoff is, is the art. So
Anyway,
it kind of got to me, but you know, I guess if I wasn't going through money things, it wouldn't as much. But that's okay. First world problem. Okay,
yep,
Pam.
Yep.
Where would you like to go next?
Well, we'll go ahead and delve into the carryovers, which were from your Khalid Hosseini. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. And up next we have Jacques LeBlanc by Ken Smith. Brought home in a body bag after the Dieppe raid on the beaches of Normandy, one of 2,763 Canadians dead. They laid him on the kitchen table of the cottage cabin with plates of cheese, apples, fresh bread, tankards of ale. His three sisters, Marie, Carol, and Evangeline, singing La Marseillaise as Basil the blacksmith entered, long bearded, a dark broad hat tilted over a blind eye, not unlike the Norse god Odin with three battlefield maids. The Valkyries pouring a mead of fermented honey and water to see Jacques off to Valhalla. End poem.
Nicely done, Pam. I thought this was, so it's interesting because here we are with a different writer, right? Khalid Hosseini, different era, and yet we're still dealing with war, you know, the Second World War in this case, right? The storming of the beach of Normandy during D-Day. It just shows you how these things are timeless, and the problems that we are dealing with in terms of life and warfare never change. So I thought it was a wonderful, though sad, storytelling poem. And Ken has this gift telling a wonderful, you know, rich story in very few lines. And he does it again with this one. So very well done. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, yeah, I liked this. Well, first of all, it was really interesting, as you said, how it fits so well with both shows. And he does. Ken really does have a gift for storytelling. And what I like is that while it is a story and the characters themselves are fictional, it really truly represents a sad reality of war. And that is that, you know, people die and, you know, everybody else has to continue on with life amidst their despair. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. And it's worth mentioning that in these incredibly rich contests that we run, this was awarded the Jade Medallion, one of the Jade Medallions. So very well done, Ken. Always appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
Where are we going next?
All right. Well, up next we have Eyes, Lips, and Fingers by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Richard, and give that a read, please.
Okay. Yep. This is Eyes, Lips, and Fingers by Ben Hart. 1. Eyes, Lips, and Fingers. Eyes that lead just beyond longing. Oops. Let me try that again. Eyes that lead beyond just longing, forever getting back that something they couldn't look at anymore, to summer, not for fear of losing itself in something new, but for fear of losing you in something old too easily. Lips trading farewells upon falling into place, somewhere they'd never dreamed of reaching. And at the end of mortal millennia, I hope to catch its feeling. Let love be the requiem at our heart's last tandem beating, fingers slowly letting go of their acoustic aching. The only thing they know how to play without playing it safe, melody of the merry-go-round of misery, a weed in a field of happy memories. Two. Envy. I envy the rain because it doesn't ask to be pardoned when coming in contact with you. And I ask to be excused every time I stumble into touch, afraid to leave you bruised. I envy the wind, how it gets to kiss your skin without you feeling bereft upon its subtle death. It gets to disrupt the resting of your head like wild horses through Carnelian woods after we put the kids to bed. I envy God because from whatever muse he drew, the inspiration to make you the woman who with one throwaway stare could make even mountains retreat, he must have loved beyond belief. Three, bad goodbye. Carbon monoxide kiss goodnight. What good is a messiah that survives? Child soldiers of climate change. It doesn't matter anyway. Man will always kill what he's sowed. And it's not much of a sacrifice when it's your time to go. Sylvia's last lullaby sang by her minute minder. Another moment left on the mince grinder. Even though the recipe clearly forbids it. And on the kitchen table, she left lunch for the kids who were coming to visit. Backseat driver suicides, you hated your life ever since I've hated mine. God damn it, girl. I get it now. Why you couldn't stick around. It feels strange to say aloud. I will forever be torn between never getting over you and fighting to feel fine. End of poem. Okay, Pam, what'd you think of that one?
Well, first of all, great read there, Richard. Oh, my goodness. This is one of those poems that, to me, just really hits hard. And the imagery and metaphors are brilliant. It's really a powerful write that to me speaks deeply on love and loss, fear, kind of the big question of what if somebody hadn't left. I really like I envy God because from whatever muse he drew the inspiration to make you the woman who with one throwaway stare could make even mountains retreat. He must have loved beyond belief. And Sylvia's last lullaby sang by her minute minder, another moment left on the mince and the meat grinder. You know, there's some wonderful rhyme and flow to that, just really raw, gritty imagery. And the whole idea of the idea of people who are left behind after a tragedy. So amazing write and very well done.
Yeah, I have to agree. Pam, great comment. And more and more, I have come to be in awe of Ben Hart's work. The power of his poetry is just jaw-droppingly good. And I see that this was added to the finalists, but we must have just run out of medals. But there's no way that this would not have been added to finalists because it's just so much talent there. Such a great story that's being told, gut-wrenching and very moving throughout in a visceral level. I thought it was a highly emotive poem. kaleidoscopic views of life through its varied seasons of love and loss, and the use of Sylvia Plath, the nod to Sylvia Plath in such a way, it's very, very gut-wrenching and powerful. And I have to say, he does his own images as well. So that's his artwork we're looking at if you're on the site. As talented an artist as he is a poet. So it's really just amazing. Yeah, yeah. Had you realized that it's his artwork on these things?
I only knew that because he had been on Headliner's Ball with Jeremy and me, and that came up as part of the discussion. So, yeah.
Great. Really talented guy. So, and very thankful that he writes for our shows. Okay, Pam.
All right. And our last carryover is Under the Vanity Stars by Lana Lewis Bludgett. And it goes like this. Walk jubilantly, embraced by the night sky, in the chilling breath of night, along the pathway of untold stories, drenched in a mantle of vain reveries, whose schemes of mystery chase through the fiery trails of stars. Sit under the cosmic gallery of shooting stars, where dragons and archers, kings, dogs, and swans trace patterns to elevate your dreams, while your heart rises to its limit. Stand under the moon's silent face, unmasking your essential self, illuminated by the brilliant mix of bright studded tapestries flashing overhead, displaying your madness and glory.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, what a spiritual, even mystical poem. It's as if poem, an incantation of an altered state beyond ordinary mental gymnastics. Very powerful. And we did actually give this one the Jade Medallion as well. Great, great poetry. Amazing imagery. And what do you think of it, Pam?
Yeah, you know, I have to agree. It does have a touch of mysticism and spirituality to it. Has a wonderful imagery. This is a new poet to me, so you know I'm going to definitely have to check more of them out. They're extremely talented. I also liked how, while it was spiritual, there was to me this idea of how, which I guess is a spiritual thought on its own, the idea that we can learn from the night sky if we only take time to listen to both the shadows and the light. And so I think there's also this kind of idea that the shadows and lights within ourself, that mix of illumination, we need to take time to acknowledge. And I really like displaying your madness and glory as the end line, the idea of not being afraid to stand out. You know, so wonderful write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Great comment there. Yeah, I like that ending too. Yeah. Okay, so we are done with the carryovers. And where are we going next?
Up next, we have One to One Shared by Garanwi. And go ahead, Richard.
Okay, so this is Garanwi. One-to-one shared. Left to be discovered, laying on the desk, so it won't be burnt to cindered censorship. A poem to be found and held in your hand. It's written just for you, the finder, to keep. The poem for you, my reader, our personal contact. Let me speak to you. And no one else, share with you our keepsake. Unlike pictures everyone sees, this is just you and me. We can talk to each other with words from message, knowing my poem has made us friends. That is this poet's contract of intimacy, a secret shared by my reader with me. End of poem. And what'd you think of that one there, Pam?
Oh, I always enjoy and appreciate Granwy's writing. You know, I like how this speaks so beautifully on the idea that poetry is to be shared between the heart of the poet and the heart of the individual reader, and not for the masses to judge and condemn. And while I know that might sound kind of ironic coming from somebody who runs multiple contests per week and hosts, you know, or is on multiple poetry shows per week, you know, it's really because I know we have an obligation, and I feel that obligation and that love for getting poetry out to multiple people, knowing we have multiple listeners, multiple people who write for our contest. But at the same time, it's when I get that message or that comment from the individual poet, you know, after I've commented on their poetry or they've commented on mine, that you realize you're sharing something so personal. Despite the big platform we're on, you're really sharing something so personal on a heart-to-heart basis. And I really like how this is told in the voice of the poet speaking directly to the reader. You know, let me speak to you and no one else. Share with you our keepsake. Unlike pictures everyone sees, this is just you and me. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an interesting, and one of the things that I really love about Robert Graves is that he's writing about writing and specifically writing about poetry. And this was to the prompt, never use the word audience, the very idea of a public, unless the poet is writing for money, seems wrong to me. Poets don't have an audience. They're talking to a single person all the time. And I think Granwy captured that. I thought he had a wonderful take on that prompt. It was intimate, which was, you know, right on the nose for this prompt, and it rang true throughout. So very well done. Okay, and who's up next?
Let me see here. Sorry, I should have been a bit more prepared. And,
oh, no worries.
Here we go. I'm going to put up one of my favorite poets. Of course, I have so many favorite poets. But this is Spectred by Wade, gloss form Robert Graves by Way Down Upon Joy. And it goes like this. Your phantom wore the moon's cold mask, and yet your eyes were warm as stars reflected passing time. My mind perfected norm. A paradox of paradigm, your phantom wore the moon's cold mask. My phantom wore the same, till light of day revealed a maze, but eyes still wander without will, to ghostly dreams that stream ablaze, and though I sensed an intense thrill, my phantom wore the same. Forgetful of the feverish task, the mind's eye ties a lover's knot, illusions wade through shadowed land to walk and talk with ghostly thought, a silent sort of self-command, forgetful of the feverish task, in hope of which they came, a microscope for mindful sight, in action's timely consequence, when all is seen in clearer light, a kind of living cognizance, in hope of which they came. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. Yeah, you know, Way Down Upon Joy has a wonderful understanding and command of poetry, form poetry. And And this gloss form, Robert Graves' poem, is just another example of how she does it. And it's the musicality, she just knows how to do it. I thought it was a brilliant riffing off of the Graves quote, a wonderful display of the driving melody of the glass, of the gloss form, and very nicely crafted throughout. And as reader, Pam, I'd be real interested to hear how it was for you to read this aloud.
You know, when the rhyme and meter is just this perfect, you know, it's a delight to read. I do feel, of course, like as usual, I kind of stumbled over little parts, but that's more me than, you know, the poem itself. And it's beautiful to read. I really like the gloss form and would like to myself experiment with that more. I've only tried it like once, but, you know, like taking four lines from a poem, in this case, a poem, the poem Full Moon by Robert Graves, and then working your own in to make a completely new, you know, something, a completely new piece of art. I thought this was a beautiful and brilliant write. The imagery was thoughtful. And I like how it spoke on the idea of unmasking our ghosts, unmasking our demons, and then bringing them to the light. So that there can be found this sense of balance. So wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Okay, so where would you like to go next?
All right, well, up next I will put up one of our SoundClouds and... we have A Nest of Vipers Soliloquy, Claudius Roman Emperor by Stolina. And go ahead, Richard, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Let's see. Here it is.
Slimy serpents slither, hissing in mires of mendacity, laying foul eggs of corruption and conspiracy, bursting open, oozing with murderous machinations. Forked tongues, spitting venom, seeking destruction, tainting the might, the essence of Rome. What lofty ideals and genius exist in those who hold her dear in their hearts. Forward thinkers striving to achieve the greatness for this our jewel amongst elevated empires with sublime art and poesy, which symbolize with grace and beauty. Thus, not only to be feared, but admired and extolled through the annals of time. Dripping daggers pierce the very heart with avidity, mar our honor with infamy, So the name of Rome is not spoken with reverence and love, but spat from lips cursed with contempt, reviled. I weep for loss of those sweet days of savants which filled my soul with ambrosia, and for my beloved Rome, my all.
Thank you for the sound, Cloud Stellina. And boy, that was a performance piece. So it truly brings the poem to life. It is, of course, quite painful to hear Claudia stammering, but that's the payoff, the pain of his soliloquy, the message of Rome's painful political viper battles. A wonderful tribute to Graves' classic, I, Claudius. And I would have to get my copy of the novel, so don't quote me, but I think it actually starts with him saying, as narrator, Claudius saying, you know, let my tongue untangle as it never could while I was alive. And she brings that to us so skillfully, and just a dynamite piece. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, it makes me really want to, between your comment and her poem, it really makes me want to read the novel. You know, it's wow, it's a brilliant write. This is a work of art poem here on so many levels. First of all, for anyone not looking at the poem, if you can, I highly recommend you do, because it's actually a shape poem, a concrete poem, where she made it shaped like a snake, and that was her first attempt at it, so kudos to her on that. The performance, where she really got into the character and into his stuttering, and then even on a poetic level, like even if this hadn't had a SoundCloud and it hadn't been shaped to fit the theme of the poem, it still would have been poetically beautiful with its use of strong imagery and alliteration. And I like how this is obviously in the voice of a specific character, and yet, you know, it speaks so strongly on that person who loves their country, and, you know, who just has their only sense of self is tied up into their loyalty to their country, and the unfortunate betrayals that they see within it. I particularly like dripping daggers that pierce the very heart with avidity, mar or honor with infamy, so the name of Rome is not spoken with reverence and love, but spat from lips. Yeah, so just an absolutely amazing write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. And where would you like to go next?
All right. Have we had Dexter call in yet?
Not yet. I'm looking out for him.
All right.
I saw that too in the room. I was like, ooh, great.
That would be nice. It would be great to have a third person join us. A little bit of
a
breather.
It makes it a little, it brings a whole different dynamic to it, but that's all right.
It really does. It really does. Absolutely. All right. Well, up next we have The Old Sailor by A.G. Paquiken. And go ahead, Richard, please, and give that a read for us.
Okay, so this is A.J. Paquiken, The Old Sailor. salted sailor beams with a crooked grin. Eager youths crowd around him in. He senses their words as fickle as the breeze, shifting with the tide and the whimsical seas. But with decades spent on the ocean vast, he can separate the lies from the steadfast. Through flattery, blather, and deceitful chatter, he knows true wisdom is earned from weathered leather. Take heed from this old salt, wizened and sage. Value the words that come from deep within the heart's cage. The sailor who braves the storms with grit, true words endure and withstand the test of time's infinite. End of poem. Okay, Pam, what do you think of that one?
I really enjoy and appreciate this one. It's got a beautiful classic feel to it with the choice of rhyme and imagery. I've started to read more of A.G., and I have to say I really appreciate and enjoy their writing. I've noticed they do seem to have an appreciation themselves for the theme of the old world sailors, which I think is great because it's such a classic theme that it just is always one that's both beautiful and entertaining to read. And I really like the rhyme and flow in this. I like the classical poetry vibe. And I thought it was a wonderful write on the idea of the old wisdom that can be learned from an old sailor. I particularly like, but with decades spent on the ocean vast, he can separate the lies from the steadfast. Through flattery, blather, and deceitful chatter, he knows true wisdom is earned from weathered leather. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, this was too. This was his take on Robert Graves' A Pinch of Salt. And we always do put that, you know, we give the poets, I try and give them around, I don't know, usually around 11, maybe 13 different prompts. And then after that, I specifically say, or anything that you want by this, it's usually a writer of some kind. And I always love it when the poet takes me up on that offer and riffs off of something completely different, which is very easy to do with Robert Graves because he's so prolific. So, okay. So yeah, and I thought it was a beautifully crafted rhyming poem that rings with the salt of the ocean spray. Very well done. And where would you like to go next, Pam?
All right. Well, up next we have I Write by Manuel, and it goes like this. Bouncing voices against gray walls, tattooing words on hollow rocks, a head full of stargazer lilies, a page empty but for doodles. Then tongues slash, bloodied ink spills from engorged veins, third eye blinks, ringing from the pages, echoing in the space between distant stars. Come in, Major Tom. Visions swim in thick treacle syrup, attracting headless flies that die after licking. Vuvuzela, flowers, trumpet, an overture of allegory, but the fanfare dies on walk ears. The pen scratches on the muse's hems with Rorschach stains. Quick, call the Agur. The weight stretches, only the void listens. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. Yeah, you know, this was another take on the prompt, never use the word audience. And so interesting that Mamiya had such a different interpretation of that same prompt and such an impressive write. It's always interesting as the reader, as we get to become more familiar with the poet's work, you know, we just kind of, I don't know, I guess I should speak for myself, but I just kind of like fall in love with their poetry, you know. And from the very first time that I read Mamiya's work, I appreciated the craftsmanship and the quality of the work. But as I read more and more of her, it just becomes an even greater appreciation of her craft. And this poem was I felt, one of her finest efforts. And I loved where she took the prompt, the closing stanza, the weight stretches, only the void listens. Questions if we are even talking to a single person when we write poetry. I thought it was very philosophical and highly spiritual. It was existentialism, but without any hint of the morbidity that usually accompanies an existential poem. So very well done and quite unique and innovative. And Pam, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is just absolutely beautiful. And you're right, it is interesting to take the same prompt and see how our poets take the same prompt and use it in different ways. I really like A Head Full of Stargazer Lily, the page empty but for doodles. And I can relate to that. You know, when I was in high school, I used to do this nerdy thing of, you know, just begging my parents to get me like one or two extra notebooks because I wanted to have notebooks just for writing down little poems and doing doodles and all that. And I'm still like that. I have, you know, notebooks all over the place that I just, you know, doodle or, you know, write in. But I love the imagery in this. I love how she balances out the idea of the light and the darkness within. I thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors, and it was this really great write on the way a poet connects to their own individual muse on a personal level. And I like how this almost makes it feel like she brings us into her own mind where all those visions swim in that thick treacle syrup. You know, amazing lines right there and just very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment. Okay, and where would you like to go next?
All right, up next we have Between the Cloud and Fiery Pillar by Eric Svensson, and we have a SoundCloud for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, pull it.
Between the Cloud and Fiery Pillar. Is, was, would be, comes the cloud, mystical vapor descends, response unpredictable, erratic weather conditions, run of the mill these days, fires, floods, and financial implosion, clockwork orange, the earthquakes, Babylon falls. Is, was, would be. Matriarchy is served by patriarchy, the latter splattered by machinery. Cloud told graves of to death of machinery comes the magical epoch. Cloud descends when computer is switched on. Gestation of mystical vapor. Poems are sent to be stored in magical clouds somewhere. Insertion of magical, mystical, Aquarian age. afraid, or Lansandrei cower into trenches, fires, floods, and financial implosion. Embrace each itch, welcome each twitch. Pillar of cloud descends by day to guide the way. Pillar of fire illumes each terse trench night. Call to arms, embrace each itch, welcome each twitch. Left hand receives esoteric guidance. Crucible crux is what the right hand does with it. Pity, Robert is already in his grave. In 1965, Malcolm Muggeridge interview, he alluded to 2036 as D-Day. Meanwhile, embrace each cloud dissension, darling poets. Capture each creative typhoon tithe title. Words safely stashed, rehashed in the magical cloud. Pillar of fire protects each gold nugget, right hand wrought in these terse trench nights. End poem.
Great SoundCloud there, Eric. We much appreciate it. And Pam, what were your thoughts on this one?
Well, you know, Eric is just one of those. I always enjoy reading his poetry multiple times, which is good because oftentimes you need to read it multiple times. And this is absolutely stunning. First of all, I really like the title. And between the cloud and fiery pillar, and that feels like it could be a war poem type, title. But yet the fact that he takes cloud and brings into modern times, you know, talks about the storage cloud, and just amazing imagery and metaphors. I like that he brings up the clockwork orange, the earth shakes, Babylon falls, is, was, would be, matriarchy usurps patriarchy, the latter splattered by machinery. It speaks on the idea to me that we're all controlled by something. We all depend on something. This is just one of those really clever and intelligent rites. And I like how it has these imagery and metaphors that to me speak on the idea that changing times can bring both benefits and downfalls. I really like call to arms, embrace each itch, welcome each twitch, left hand receives esoteric guidance, crucible crux is what the right hand does with it. Great lines on the idea of balance created, and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment. I too really love this poem. It's just such powerful work and compelling, you know, the double entendre with the cloud and the fiery pillars of modern life, including the pillar of fire illumines each terse trench night, call to arms, embrace each itch, welcome each twitch. Just a wonderful piece of poetry. And he does it every time for us, so. This was no exception, just a real strong offering. And with that, I am bringing it round back to you, Pam.
All right. Let's see. Am I off mute? Yes, I am.
You are.
Good. All right. I think the best way to find out is to ask.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I'm asking myself because I actually am on mute. But it works either way. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and put up Light Years by Neutron Bomb. And go ahead, Richard, please, and give that a read for us.
Okay, now Neutron had written to that same prompt that we opened the show with, which was prompt two, there's no money in poetry, but there's no poetry in money either. And she wrote a poem called Light Years. It goes like this. One, gods of industry pat each other on the back of immigrants, cutting tiles, felling trees, smelting steel for progress. Silicosis scars their lungs as they consume a cheeky cigarette on sight. Plumes of dust are hidden by shade cloth hoardings, while demolition trucks, uncovered loads, haul their booty to separate the partition boards and reinforced eel from concrete and mortar. Two, money lines the pockets of investors and the award ceremonies promote the product devoid of poetry. Tree planting ceremonies top off a grueling construction process, plying back the floor levels to fit another in. One more impossible floor braced with post-tensioning cable to hold the building up, to stop the death wobbles for its incumbent occupants. Three, anti-homeless devices are installed in the crevices of buildings, even in the street furniture. Installed with aluminum arms to prevent an inebriate passerby from resting horizontally. Banks line the skyline with commercial high-rise towers, their facades dissolving into another competing anchor tenants that line the lobbies with rainforest decoupage. Their light beams illuminate into the atmosphere, dulling the stars that have traveled light years to bear witness to the saturated night sky. Four, the poet scribbles on napkins, watching the sewer rats that have overtaken Sydney in the absence of pest control deemed insufficient to stop the onslaught of scurrying critters that bite through cold room walls and fossick for scraps in the basement bins, which run adjacent to the parking attendants who scrub dust from executive vehicles. The poet observes, lying dormant, waiting for her voice to take flight, like German cockroaches, to muddle her meandering mind, crawling across her neck beneath her body's warmth. For a glimpse, the district views. End of poem. And we do have, I believe, Dexter on the line. Let me bring him on the air.
Hey,
Dexter,
Richard.
Is that you? Hey, welcome.
Yep.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah,
hey,
glad
Dexter.
I could be here. Hey, Pam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glad I could be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're glad you can make it. So did you have a chance to hear and read Neutron's poem?
I heard the last half. If you could go to Pam, I could get it together to read the first half here. And I'd love to make
a comment on
it.
Yep, yep. Sounds like a plan to me. Go ahead, Pam. That's your cue.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, this is just absolutely amazing. First of all, I have to say congratulations to her on a well-deserved front page pick. And there's so much that speaks to me on this call. I mean, just the basic idea of how, you know, the wealthy step upon the backs of the poor and people don't care about those who suffer without homes, where it says anti-homeless devices are installed in the crevices of buildings. Today on Facebook, my sister shared something, an article from the Duluth News Tribune, where she lives in Duluth, Minnesota, about how there's apartment buildings where they want to, that was just built last year for low-income families, and they want to take the second floor and make it into a flower shop business, which makes absolutely no sense, because trust me, there are no poor families in Duluth. And Duluth, it isn't a huge city, but it's, for the size it is, it does have, a homeless problem. I know people there who absolutely struggle. And so when you read about cities that, are putting up these, anti-homeless devices, trying to discourage people from being able to rest when sometimes all they have is a bench to rest on, and I went on a bit of a tangent there, but this is just such a powerful right. It speaks to me also on the outreach of nature crushed beneath the towering greed of progress. And I really also, I love this all the way through, but especially banks line the skyline with commercial high-rise towers, their facades dissolving into one another, competing for anchor tenants that line the lobbies with rainforest decoupage. And then, of course, the poet scribbles on napkins, watching the sewer rats that have overtaken Sydney, the absence of pest control deemed insufficient to stop the onslaught of scurrying critters. And I like that she brings us into her own home area and makes this personal. And yet at the same time, it's so relatable to anybody who has seen this kind of ugliness, this kind of disregard. So amazing right and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I have to say, it always warms my heart when we put a board together in honor of one of these great writers, and All Poetry recognizes the quality of the work and awards these front page picks. And I can't remember the last time we did a show where we didn't have at least one front page pick from the writing that was generated by the show. So it's a cool thing, and that I have to just tip my hat to, fill my eyes, because it's all her hard work behind the scenes that makes everything kind of come together. And regarding this poem, I loved where she took this prompt. And this is the prompt that I wrote to as well. And the stark contrast of money and poetry rings true throughout her poem. But especially I thought it was poignant in the poet scribbles on napkins, watching the sewer rats that have overtaken Sydney, the absence of pest control deemed insufficient to stop the onslaught of scurrying critters that bite through cold room walls. And it really does give you that dark urban megapolis feel. Living in New York City all those years, I can identify with the scurrying rats. They are definitely part of the subterranean landscape, and I think she brings it in a very authentic way that gives color to the no money in poetry and no poetry in money. So very well done. Jer, we are going to give you final word on this poem.
Yeah, I thought that this was an incredible write by Neutron and very, very well-deserving of a front-page pick. When you talk about the money lines and pockets of investors and the award ceremonies promote the product devoid of poetry, I can't help but think about that whole little three lines as far as the music industry now. The music industry seems like it's taken such a dip, like especially, you know, mainstream music for sure, but it just seems like there's so the lack of original thought in music and it's such a dip, and that's what's promoted nowadays. It's taken such a dip. It's just the stuff that is very well promoted. And there's just so much things that that are being set up to harm the growth of our society. And I just think that Neutron captured that so well in this. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Dax. All right, Pam, where'd you like to go?
All right. Up next, I am going to go ahead and put my poem. And I actually was inspired by his poem, Dead Cow Farm, because it has cow in it, so why not? And actually, because it was actually a really good poem, but that's what caught my attention the first time I saw it. All right. And this is the fruits and droppings upon a woven carpet of history. Mayhem, mirth, lust, and mystery has been a part of history, fighting prayer and keeping score, the campaign lines drawn between rich and poor. In the garden, the vines do grow, man and woman stand toe to toe. Hands and lips plucked deviled fruit, the man he dreams of a fine suit. The woman dreams of lasting love, both are blind to what stands above. The clouds are shaped like Roman cattle, a feast of beasts for men of battle. Perpetua felicity, face the coiled snake's calamity, held deep within a prison's walls, to face the flame yet never fall. The mother cow that bears the calf knows more than humankind by half. She sees the blood spilled on the earth, knows life and death both have their worth. Trees are reaching towards the sky, while swine they dream of ways to fly. Will you step beyond self-made cage, find something worthy of your rage? Cows cannot write nor take a bribe, which is why man has become the scribes. History often carries the charms of droppings on a petting farm, and with open eyes poets see holy cows and saints both come to be. The toiling cornerstone and feast, the rising horn that burns the beast. End poem.
Great poetry there, Pam. Okay, I have to say that to my memory, this is the first time I had read one of your rhyming poems. And no surprise that it was a Longhorned Triumph. The extended metaphor I felt was compelling throughout, and it was truly a rich poetic vibing. And again, you know, the richness of Graves' work enabled you to go outside of the given prompts, which I always applaud, and just a wonderful piece. And I know it kind of is as the mood strikes, but boy, you have a real talent and gift for rhyming poetry. So wonderful.
Well, thank you
so much for bringing
the inspiration. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for bringing it to us. And Dexter, what'd you think?
Yeah, I would agree so too. And Pam, I would say, differ on the way that we rhyme, and this is what I really appreciate, is that she actually went with true rhymes. You know, there's a way that when you read poetry, that when you rhyme it, when a lot of times when you rhyme, it's kind of the way that you talk a little bit, and Pam went with so many true rhymes throughout this piece. And but the key of this whole thing is that where is it here? the woman dreams of lasting love. Both are blind to what stands above. Where is it? We're about the birth. The mother cow that births the calf knows more than the humankind by half. There's such, you know, what I really enjoy about this, right, is that it's almost perfect for the end of Women's History Month, because it talks about a connection that even, you know, that even a cow knows that humankind doesn't, about the empathy and the feeling between birth and death, or the we have. And there's a certain connection that women have in totality that men will never understand, you know. Breastfeeding and things like that. There's a certain connection that's talked about in here, and I like how you encompass the cow. And I just think that this is an incredible rite.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yep, great comment there, Dexter. Okay, and where would you like to go now, Pam?
All right, up next we have The Bright by Orenz. And we do have a SoundCloud for that, so whenever you're ready, Richard.
Okay, there we go, I see it, okay. Apologies, let me try that again.
The Bright by Orenz. Be dim, be mellow, never be unkind. Don't show me how you bleed, disguise your mind. Then never let there be a hellish glow to any of your words. Don't look below, and when you step up to the spire's light, don't cast a shadow in the coming night. No blaze of any kind, no curse or rage. Don't ever conjure demons on the page. It wouldn't do to try to exorcise the darkest parts of you. Instead, write lies without profanity and without pain. But now, what is there that you'd really gain? A heart too full of ghosts? A madman's song, who's gouged his eyes out merely to belong. When all's been said, it's done, and meaning sank. A page so pure and white, it's almost blank. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Orenz. And for a relatively short poem, this brims with truth and depth. I felt it was a cry against numbing of dark emotions and what I like to call the cult of positivity, an embracing of the Jungian shadow, and truly a great poem. And Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought you nailed that just right. And, you know, so in talking about the cult of positivity, God, I was just trying to think about the cartoon that we just watched with our class with all the kids where they had all the emotions and they were all just these different colors. But sadness came in and was the key thing at the end that you realized that you needed. But, you know, a madman's song who gouged his eyes out merely to belong. It's such a strong part because it's like so many people out there, including myself, feel like they don't belong within the confines and within the thing. And it's just like how is it that you just wish that you just wish that you thought like everybody else? I thought that this right captured that so well. Very well done.
Mm-hmm. Great insights there. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, this is wonderful. As always, she's got strong imagery and just amazing rhyme and flow. I like how this speaks, at least to me, on the importance of expressing both the light and dark of yourself. You know, because, you know, I like how you bring up the idea of like a cult of positivity. Like there's something very fake and very negative about being always positive. And I really think it also speaks on the idea that some of the best poetry comes from our darkest selves. You know, and that comes through in the end line, a page so pure and white, it's almost blank. I also really like no blaze of any kind, no curse or rage. Don't ever conjure demons on the page. It wouldn't do to try to exercise the darkest parts of you. Instead, write lies. That really, really biting lines on the whole, from a voice that's trying to encourage someone to not be true to themselves. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment there, Pam. And yeah, and Jenny in the room gave us the name of that movie that you were alluding to, Dex. It's called Inside Out. And I've seen it. I just couldn't remember the name of it. So thanks, Jenny.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, it's funny that sadness comes in to save the day. And I thought that cartoon is so perfect for what you're talking about and what the poem was alluding to. You know, we need that sadness. You know, it's part of us. So very well done.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
All right. Well, up next, Richard, I'm going to go ahead and put up your poem. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. So this is another one that is to the prompt, there's no money in poetry, but there's no poetry in money either. So it's called There's No Poetry in Money. Money is calling for prose, for dead-eyed, serious boy-girl drama, for alien specters and creaky, haunted attics where knocking table seances draw breath from cobwebbed shadows. Cigar-chomping TV producers motion for starlit actresses to twirl ballerina-like for the imaginary camera's cold eye, then call for a sound check, though her emotive recitation of Graves falls on deaf ears and dumb tongues. Money is clamoring for prose, ringing cast iron bells from Notre Dame's hunchbacked heights as the crowds jeer, hiss, and throw rotting fruit at the one clear eye of our downside-up king. Bestseller, encore, author, but not for me, nor for you. Our God rings white in eternity's funeral pyre, while harvesting the wind, making a dust of money's flooded rivers. She knows no refuge in champagne breakfasts, nor red brick houses whose garages shelter two cars. No, our God is homeless, tired, and sick of the stringing of bikini thongs along cracked corners, mad and 40th, singing drop your francs, euros, yen, sterling, and dollars, then follow. End poem.
Great read there, Richard. And Dexter, let's start with your thoughts.
I thought this was a fantastic, right? Really talking about, I guess you could almost call it, almost in a sense, propaganda, or just the way that we're spoon-fed a lifestyle, and how that not only leads to poor execution or just poor art form by the people that are performing, but it also, this whole abundance of it all leads to this unruly crowd that really doesn't give a shit about the process or doesn't care about the backstory of it. They would rather hiss and throw rotting fruit and all of the, you know, and the best-selling author there. Everybody's looking to have a cosign on who likes what. Richard, you tapped into a very, the core, I guess, of the entertainment industry that we have on right now at the current state in this, right? And so I thought it was very well done.
Thanks, Dex.
Wonderful comment there, Dex. Very insightful. I really like how within this you pay tribute not only to the art form of poetry, but to the impact that Robert Graves himself has on poets with that line, then call for a second check, though her emotive recitation of Graves falls on deaf ears and dumb tongues. And it says powerful, powerful imagery and metaphors throughout. I like how it speaks for poetry, but really speaks to me on all kinds of art forms where, it becomes the difference between the true art, the art that is done, you know, for the sake of art and for the beauty of it and the knowledge of it and to share it. But, you know, the popular demand, gives a voice to what is seen, what is wanted. You know, cigar-chomping TV producers motion for starlet actresses to twirl ballerina-like. You know, there's always that demand that people, it was like, this is what you have to listen to. This is what you must adore. And so along the roadside, the love of the art is being lost. So excellent, right, Richard, and very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam. Okay, where would you like to go next?
Well, I would say it's about time that we put Dexter to work. So.
Okay.
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, and we have up Haunting of War Until His Death by Jenny Hunt, 2017. And there you go, Dexter.
This is Jenny Hunt, 2017, Haunted of War Until His Death. Muddy is the mind, haunted by guilt, insanity from the life he built. Surviving wounds of war, yet wished for death. Steel images stored in his head, never to forget. Resting in peace, safe and sound, in his internal bed underground. His shame and guilt finally released, hatching out his poisonous beliefs. In death, you leave all your possessions in strife. You can't take money with you in the afterlife. Free from his pain and internal hauntings, he can now rest easy without his mind tauntings. In life, you pen great inspirations. In death, may you find soulful aspirations. Name is seen, dearest Robert Graves. Be your head and heart free today. End poem.
Great read there, Dex. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderfully crafted remembrance of Graves. His war-haunted life and legacy brought to life through Jenny's poem. And tremendous rhyming poetry here once again. So Graves has inspired our late night poets to pick up the pen and rhyme, and Jenny rose to that challenge and succeeded quite admirably. Very well done. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is definitely a wonderful rhyming poem. Just amazing imagery throughout. I like how it could work for multiple prompts and then at the same time pays tribute to Robert Graves himself and the way he suffered from PTSD. It actually, the end lines with Namaste, dearest Robert Graves, may your head and heart rest torment free today, reminds me of the intro that you chose where his son mentioned that when Robert Graves died, he died very peacefully. And you can imagine at that point someone being released of the burdens that they had carried of, as we talked about, survivor's guilt and PTSD. I mean, this is just an amazing write on the way war haunts a mind that is given no peace until death. And I really like that ending. But I also really like resting in peace, safe and sound in his eternal bed underground, his shame and guilt finally released, hatching out his poisonous beliefs. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Boy, Dex, I believe that you're next. Lost it there for a second.
No, I thought that Pam captured it and you know, I hope people forgive me as far as my lack of knowledge background. I wanted to call in and just be a part of the show because I enjoy all of the poets that are a part of this and not knowing the background knowledge. And I thought that Pam giving that background knowledge on it, I think that pieced it all together for me very well. And just knowing that, I thought that Jenny Hunt did a fantastic job because now after reading it again, you could just see this piece riddled with the PTSD and just she did such a good job of capturing his life within this. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And we definitely appreciate you jumping on board and sharing some comments and reading some poems with us. Always appreciate it. And with that, Pam, I'm turning it back to you.
All right. This is My Ghost by Betty Page. Oh, I knew you'd be, yet I never thought you would, though I knew you could. It's how you treat me every time that you see me and behind my back. I say in your face, I'm done with all your gossip, your venomous lies. I've no choice but to show you just how I feel now. I'm invisible, all because my ghost, I see I never knew you true. Advice you give, Blue. I'm not so naive, not that you thought that I was. I'm blunt, yes, no doubt. In all that I do, you will see just what I mean. I'll hold nothing back. Every word I say, I mean, unlike all of you, I'm so transparent. You cannot see me. So who is a ghost, who's not, as I haunt daily? End poem.
Nicely read there, Pam. Yeah, what an interesting poem. So Betty has this kind of conversational style that enables her to draw us in and make her poems very accessible and her storytelling, very accessible. And I thought this one in particular had a nice mix of comedy and tragedy in her metaphor about fantasy and relationships. So nicely crafted throughout. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was fantastic. And really be wrong. But the way that I kind of interpret this as far as my ghost, I interpret this almost as somebody that really likes to jump the gun on. And that's why I related so well to this piece, because I feel like I'm almost one of those people that because of the past and because of things that have happened, it's so easy to just go. somebody says something that almost triggers something within you, and you just go, this, that, and it, your mind immediately goes to one extreme. And I feel like that's what this write is about, and I really loved it by Betty Page.
Great comment. Nice interpretation there. I hadn't thought of it that way. And Pam, I'll give you final word.
All right. Well, I thought this was an amazing write. And I really do like her first-person narrative and the way she draws us in with such a personal write that has this wonderful, biting, almost sardonic tone to it. And this idea of being an honest person, being a transparent person, and, you know, the attitude of, if you don't like that, if you want to criticize me for that, that's your problem. So, excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Okay, and where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, up next we have Jump by S. Sharp. And go ahead, Richard, and give that a read for us, please.
Okay, I think we might have a sound cloud for this one. Let me go ahead and play that.
Jump. The steel cliffs tempt fire burning and iron gall ink. Cold fever burns pages shackled to chains of imagery. Mother Earth feeds Mother Time, nurturing children, starving, threadbare in thought. Insolvent to the shared pool of intellect. Their imagination stands on the ledge overlooking a city street, afraid to jump. As a crowd gathers 10 stories below, murmuring, whispering, while line after line unravels like patience until the crowd starts to chant, jump! Jump, jump, and the poet jumps, plunging into the arms of a hungry crowd, foaming at the mouth, hungry for blood, carrying knives, guns, and nooses, living and dying, hanging on every word.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Scott. So this was written to prompt 5, which is poetry began in the matriarchal age and derives its magic from the moon, not from the sun. No poet can hope to understand the nature of poetry unless he is had a vision of the naked king crucified to the lopped oak and watched the dancers red-eyed from the acrid smoke of the sacrificial fires, stamping out the measure of the dance, their bodies bent uncouthly forward with the monotonous chant of kill, 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 and blood, blood, blood. And I love how Scott riffed off of that and took us to jump, 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 which, of course, makes a lot more sense to our modern skyscraper-sensitive ears. And I thought this was a great riffing off of that, and that Scott shows us the great paradox of the poet, how the audience eggs them on in their painful exposition of interior truth and pathos. Very well done. Boy, what a talented poet and beautiful poem. And hold on 1 second. I just want to see something here. Dexter, why don't you go ahead and give us a comment, if you will.
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic write, and I thought this poem, I don't know what the wording would be or what it would be called, but it's as if by describing all of this in such a fashion that we become the people that are going jump, jump, jump. The reader becomes the person to becoming jump, 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 because this scene is in, you know, is in our society what is almost like a trigger word or is like a red button or whatever. We zone in and we hold in on this. And so we're all going jump, 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 jump. And essentially we're hanging on every word of the poet. And so he really muscles us into this position by his writing, and I thought it was fantastic done, really brilliantly done.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I think we are meant to feel that that pang of guilt of being in that crowd, crying jump. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, this is an amazing write. It's another powerful one. There's just been a great lineup of poetry tonight. The image of the plunging into the arms of a hungry crowd actually made me think of, you know, like if you watch like on TV or you actually go to like any like heavy metal or hard rock concerts and they do the you know, the body surfing across being passed from one person to the next. It kind of made me think of that, but like a more violent version. But it really, I like how he uses this as an extended metaphor. I like what Dexter had to say about how we become the crowd. And so oftentimes, I mean, it shows in society's love of reality television and how we cannot help but stare when there's a car accident, about how we love to gossip, you know, and about the person who has befallen a tragedy. It's almost like we don't want to solve the world's problems because we're so enamored with how entertaining, you know, violence and depression and death has become. And all the way through, this is amazing. But yeah, it definitely hit hard when he got to the jump, 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 and the poet jumps, plunging into the arms of a hungry crowd, foaming at the mouth, hungry for blood. Amazing lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
All right. Well, up next, we have A Mind of Mayhem by Daniel Descino. And go ahead, please, Dexter, and give that a read for us.
Absolutely. This is A Mind of Mayhem by Daniel Descino. As I awaken from the anesthesia fantasy land, kidnapping, trees collaborate with ancient brain as a CPR slap my open senses, ready for business. To my brain, that craziest of chemists just mixed my world with psychedelic symphony. My love affair with vision now betrayed to a geometric color cacophony. Birds sing as the breath of ancient mystic shamans. When I eat, I hear screams of mercy, crying in plated desperation as their ancestors scream helpless from deep inside the earth. And love, what a fool I was to have given it into its trickery. My heart now beats from a squeeze of its hand, and I have no more blood. Puncture wounds from love's cruel knife do not heal, and blood-stained floors do not dry. Words are just a seweristic flow gathered from storm clouds and simple streams to pollute the vast cosmic mind of oceanic blank page purity. The words once used to communicate now flutter upwards to stratospheric obscurity. They live now as an endangered species, wandering city streets, rhyming to reproductively, rhythmic to resist. Rhythmic to resist. Alliteration altogether alluring, adding to the instigation of interpretation, too introspective to ignore, too ignoring. There is no longing further from my connectivity than the lost and fading days of childhood simplicity. I have fallen and am fetal to the poison pain of curiosity, and no more tortured soul has been than a mind encaged in poetry. End poem.
Nice read there, Dax. There is no longing further from my connectivity than the lost and fading days of childhood simplicity. I have fallen and am fetal to the poison pain of curiosity. With no more tortured soul has been in the mind caged in poetry. That was an incredibly beautiful poem about the human condition, the loss of childhood innocence, and innocence's replacement with painful self-awareness of the condition of word virus caged in poetry. Indeed. Wonderful poem. Wow. Really strong. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a brilliant write. I like how it's philosophical, it's spiritual, it speaks on poetry, it speaks of the falling apart of society and the mind. I really had to say that despite being a serious topic, I did have to smile when he said, rhyming too reproductively, rhythmic to resist, alliteration altogether alluring. I mean, how great is that? But alliteration altogether alluring. I feel like it just is a wonderful write on feeling almost like trapped in your own mind and needing to get all those words out. I also really like and love What a Fool Was I to Give In to Its Trickery. My heart now beats from a squeeze of its hand, and I have no more blood. Puncture wounds from love, cruel knife, do not heal, and blood-stained floors do not dry. Amazing lines and very well done.
Absolutely great, great comment. And Dex, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought you guys summed it up fantastic. You know, this is such a enthralling, right, as far as just word, you know, I was almost caught up in the reading of it myself. And then to hear you guys talk about, you know, just the key points of it, I thought it was just, it made it spectacular. And I thought it was just a fantastic, right? Very well done by Daniel.
Great comment. Okay, Pam, I see you've put the next one up.
Yep, we have Numb But Not Indifferent by Ben Hart. We were young, forever in and out of love, like the nameless earth and famous fair Venus in Saturnine riptide meeting once in 600 heartbeats when cigarettes didn't taste deadly yet. And you were the only thing to steal my breathing, playing suicide packed chicken, telling ourselves we're strong for living past dinner. And all my poetry would be only a performance should the audience not count you among them. When we were young, I wish I was still alive and not passing by the dark side of the moon. And Mother, I will smile if you want me to, so you can remember the pictures and not the days you wasted thinking, what if you'd been stricter? Tell me, do you love or do you miss me? Am I still your son or has he gone missing? And will you love me the same if I change my mind or change my name again? Numb but not indifferent. When we were young, we could get so high that the world would take an interest. But when we would bury ourselves so deep below seeds of clementine, no one seemed to miss us. A Kintsugi injection of poppy's saddest year, healing my great grated blue veins, breaking out of your prison brains on the backs of dragons. Our parents lied about not existing. I promise in these gypsy eyes you will never find indifference. Art's lone opposer, the only magpie who loathes the glistening. You will never change its opposite. We are numb but not indifferent. Don't fault us for your underestimation of a generation. You think it's you we're running from, but we were young and only chasing inspiration. And you may call it wasted, think us brain dead, think this is how you made us. Do not be mistaken. Maybe the times are no longer changing, but they have changed us. We are young because we're dying that way on a planet that you all enjoyed and then hold it and then told us it was ours to save. But you're worried if I'm happily employed and not at a rave. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I thought this was a powerful confessional poem. I especially liked a Kintsugi injection of poppy's saddest year, healing my grated blue veins, breaking out of our prison brains on the backs of dragons. Our parents lied about not existing. This rang with the voice of experience, truth, pathos, and angst. I found it highly identifiable and very well crafted throughout. Just a very powerful offering. And Dexter, your thoughts?
This was a write that was very needed for this time. I thought it very well captured a lot of sense, and I could be wrong in my interpretation, but I felt it captured a lot of sense, the opioid addiction or the opioid crisis. And from the other side, and just the feeling of people that were young and that that were exposed into this, you know, and didn't ask for this, and then were blamed for it, and then are kind of being a lost generation due to it. This spoke of all of that heartache that is coming along with this, and so very well done.
Absolutely. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Oh, my goodness. This is an amazing write. Strong imagery and metaphors. I like, and I have to agree that with Dexter, that it speaks strongly on addiction and trying to figure out life and love through that haze of addiction. But it also speaks on judgment between generations and how easy it is for one generation or two generations past to destroy the world, to destroy society, and then expect the next one to fix it. I really like this all the way through, but especially I promise in these gypsy eyes we'll never find indifference. Art's lone opposer, the only magpie who loathes the glistening. You will never change its opposite. Wonderful lines and beautifully done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. All right. So it's one of those strange little endings here where we probably have a little bit too much time for just a quick close, but not enough time to to read and give just comments for another poem. So what I'd like to do is to take this moment to have you, Pam, tell us about what's going on in roughly 35 minutes.
Well, we will be doing Break On Through, which we have a few carryovers from a couple different shows, but then our main topic is the dancing of Loie Fuller. And if anybody has not gone on YouTube, and her name is spelled L-O-I-E-F-U-L-L-E-R, and Googled Loie Fuller dancing, you must absolutely watch it. She was like from the 1920s, and she was the she basically invented a style of dancing that used very flowy movements and costumes, and she worked a lot with different colored lighting. I mean, it's just like I posted a contest with just pictures of her, but doing her dances. But I highly encourage people to go watch her videos because it's just hypnotic and beautiful to watch. So that'll be the show coming up in about a half hour.
Very cool. Well, I am inspired to watch those videos. I love that era, and I wasn't aware of Loie Fuller, so very cool. And also keep in mind that Friday, tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern, we have Fill My Eyes with Poetry open mic, which is always a treat. And this is an opportunity for anyone who's part of our group, Late Night Poets, to drop a poem into the board and join us on the air. Comment on other poets in the group as they share their poetry and read one of your poems on the air. So it's always a good time, and we encourage people to do that tomorrow at 10 p.m. Eastern, 10 to midnight. With that, I actually do think we are probably well timed for our close. So first things first, I want to thank the people that kept us company on the board. So that's Jenny was there, and gosh, there were a bunch of people there at one point. I know Betty joined us, and I'm not going to remember them all, but we always do appreciate the people on the board keeping us company. And then especially the people in the room, I want to thank you for joining us, Dexter. It was much appreciated, especially on a night where my normal co-host, Neutron, was unavailable to join us. The extra voice was very much appreciated. And then, Pam, I really want to give a big shout-out to you for your help, because I was searching for a co-host. I knew you had written for the show and that you appreciated Robert Graves. So I really do thank you for helping out. And beyond that, absolutely. And beyond that, I want to give a shout out to Fill My Eyes behind the scenes, doing all the admin work, making sure that this show continues to work as it should. Final thanks, as always, goes to our core group of poets who write for this show every 2 weeks. You guys are doing great work out there. We ask for new writes every 2 weeks. You come through. Without you guys, there is no show. So as always, I close the show with sincere thanks to you. Thanks, everyone. Great show. Have a good night.